From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Zimbabwe's military has denied it staged a military takeover, but a spokesman said it was targeting criminals. Around 93-year-old President Robert Mugabe.
What the Zimbabwe Defense Forces is doing is to pacify a degenerating political, social, and economic situation in our country, which, if not addressed, may result in a violent conflict.
Major General S.B. Moyo said Mr. Mugabe and his family are safe. The action took place amid a dispute between the commanding general and the ruling ZANU-PF party. On Monday, General Constantino Chiwenga threatened to intervene to end what he called a purge of independence fighters from government. A party statement called that treasonable. Council on Foreign Relations Africa expert John Campbell said he believes what's developing is what he calls a peculiar coup.
By the time they're finished, Mugabe will be retained as at least a figurehead. However, I think his wife and her allies will be marginalized, and some of them, at least, I think, will end up in jail.
The army action followed the sacking of Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who's viewed as a possible Mugabe's successor. President Donald Trump is back at the White House following a 12-day, five-nation trip through Asia. He said he's proud of what he accomplished.
Very proud of it from a standpoint of security and safety, military, very proud, and trade. You will see numbers that you won't believe over the years. It's over a period of years. They will be treating us much differently than they have in the past.
He said North Korea remains a major global military threat and expressed concern about China's efforts to build and militarize outposts in the South China Sea. This is VOA News. China says it's dispatching a senior diplomat to North Korea, Special Envoy Song Tao, Friday, to discuss last month's Communist Party Congress. The Xinhua News Agency did not mention any discussion of nuclear or missile programs by Pyongyang. Thousands of Iranians spent a third night in the open after Sunday's massive 7.3 magnitude earthquake. Hundreds of aftershocks that rocked both Iran and Iraq, killing more than 500, injuring thousands more. This resident of the Iranian town of Esgelaz said the epicenter of the quake flattened her town. Residents are receiving no help. She said her children are shivering. Residents in damaged areas have complained of a lack of tents, blankets, water, and food. President Hassan Rouhani toured the city of Kermanshah, promising the government would move swiftly to help the homeless. The Saudi-led coalition air raid Tuesday on the airport in the rebel-controlled Yemeni capital Sana'a shut it down, destroying the airport's navigation system. The airfield is one of the humanitarian lifelines of the impoverished country in the grip of a struggle between the Saudi-backed government and Shia Houthi rebels. UN Refugee Agency spokesman William Spindler warned the country's 21 million people are at risk.
Yemen's conflict, which began in March 2015, has produced the world's largest humanitarian crisis. 2 million internally displaced people, 1 million returnees, and 280,000 refugees and asylum seekers are all struggling to survive.
A senior UN official appealed to the Saudi-led coalition to reopen seaports so aid can deal with spreading famine and cholera. The ports were closed to cut off weapon supplies. Lebanon's Prime Minister Saad Hariri said he'll return to his country from Saudi Arabia within 2 days, following his surprise resignation earlier this month over Iran and its proxy force in Lebanon, Hezbollah, which he accused of sowing strife. He also indicated he feared assassination. His sudden departure has caused a political crisis in Lebanon. Lebanon's foreign minister, Gibran Bazil, speaking in Paris, said when Mr. Harari returns, he will go back to the normal situation of being prime minister and will decide his own fate. Lebanon's president said he will not accept the resignation until Mr. Harari returns to formally submit it. Venezuela's government Tuesday vowed to make debt payments responsibly after two ratings agencies declared the South American oil exporter in partial default. The information minister said Caracas initiated payment of interest on its foreign debt, estimated to be $60 billion. A restructuring of the debt is seen as unlikely given U.S. sanctions. U.S. stocks in New York fell, with the benchmark Dow Jones losing 30 points to 23,409. Giant industrial conglomerate General Electric lost nearly 6% as the company undergoes a massive overhaul and investors weigh the company's future. Rising costs for services in October drove U.S. wholesale inflation to its highest level in more than 5 years. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbatha in Washington. Today is Wednesday, November 15th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Is there a military coup underway in Zimbabwe?
To the generality of the people of Zimbabwe, we urge you to remain calm and limit unnecessary movement. However, we encourage those who are employed and those with essential business in the city to continue their normal activities as usual.
That's a Zimbabwe military spokesperson speaking a moment ago on the national broadcaster. We'll get analysis from inside Zimbabwe. More protests are planned for the next 3 days in Togo, and human rights groups urge the Ugandan government to arrest visiting Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir.
As a state party to the Rome Statute, Uganda has an unequivocal obligation to cooperate with the ICC in relation to the enforcement of warrants of arrest issued against Omar al-Bashir.
Mohamed Undefuna is the executive director of the Human Rights Network of Uganda. A new report puts Uganda's state security agencies at the top of human rights violators, and Burundian police crack down on human trafficking. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Loud explosions were reportedly heard in Zimbabwe's capital, Harare, overnight after troops reportedly seized the state broadcaster, prompting speculation of a coup. The blast came hours after military vehicles were seen heading toward the city after Military Chief General Constantino Chiwenga warned the army to step into political infighting within the ruling ZANU-PF party. A moment ago, a military spokesman spoke on the Zimbabwe national broadcaster.
We are against that act of injustice, and we intend to protect everyone of you against that. To the judiciary, the measures underway are intended to ensure that, as an independent arm of the state, you are able to exercise your independent authority without fear of being obstructed, as has been the case with this group of individuals. To our members of parliament, your legislative role is of paramount importance for peace and stability in this country. And it is our desire that a dispensation is created that allows you to serve your respective political constituencies according to democratic tenets. To the generality of the people of Zimbabwe, we urge you to remain calm and limit unnecessary movement. However, we encourage those who are employed and those with essential business in the city to continue their normal activities as usual. Our wish is that you enjoy your rights and freedoms, and that we return our country to a dispensation that allows for investment, development, and prosperity that we all fought for and for which many of our citizens paid the supreme sacrifice. To political parties, we urge you to discourage your members from engaging in violent behavior. To the youth, we call upon you to realize that the future of this country is yours. Do not be enticed with the dirty coins of silver. Be disciplined and remain committed to the ethos and the values of this great nation. To all churches and religious organizations in Zimbabwe, we call upon you and your congregations to pray for our country and to preach the gospel of love, peace, unity, and development. To both our people and the world beyond our borders, we wish to make it abundantly clear that this is not a military takeover of government. What the Zimbabwe Defense Forces is doing is to pacify a degenerating political, social, and economic situation in our country, which, if not addressed, may result in a violent conflict. We call upon all the war veterans to play a positive role in ensuring peace, stability, and unity in the country. To members of the Zimbabwe Defense Forces, all leave is cancelled, and you are all to return to your barracks with immediate effect. To our respected traditional leaders, you are the custodians of our culture, customs, traditions, and heritage, and we request you to provide leadership and direction to your communities for the sake of unity and development in our country. To the other security services, we urge you to cooperate for the good of our country. Let it be clear that we intend to address the human security threats in our country. Therefore, any provocation will be met with an appropriate response. And to the media, we urge you to report fairly and responsibly. We thank you.
That was a Zimbabwe military spokesman speaking moments ago on national state broadcast. Joining us now from Harare is political analyst Rashid Mukundu. Let me say good morning to you and welcome to Daybreak Africa.
Thank you for having me.
We hear that the military has taken over the radio station, the national broadcaster. What did they have to say?
The military came out almost 30 or 40 minutes ago and said that the president and his family are safe, that the military has taken over government institutions, including the state broadcaster, and they are going after the criminal elements, what they allege to be criminal elements that surround the president. So essentially, the military encouraged civil servants to go to work, encouraged those who work in critical areas to go to work, but also cautioned that they will not tolerate any demonstrations, any marches, whilst they carry out what they say is a clean-up of the criminal elements that surround the president. And by that, they mean those people who were with the First Amendment in fighting the war veterans of the liberation struggle.
It must be confusing to the people there in Harare and Zimbabwe. Did the military say they are taking over the government? And have they told the people where is President Robert Mugabe?
The military clearly said that they have not staged a coup. They emphasized that point that we have not taken over the government. They clearly said that we have not deposed the government of President Robert Mugabe. And they emphasized the point that the president is and his family are safe, and that they still regard President Mugabe as their commander-in-chief, but they are going after those elements that they allege to be criminal elements who are surrounding the president, and essentially they are political rivals in ZANU-PF. So I agree with you that it's a confusing situation, but the bottom line is that the military is now in charge of Zimbabwe. And the statement that the president is safe, I'm sure, is intended for the regional and the international community, but essentially the military is in charge.
So from where you are in Harare, have you seen any massive military movement? I mean, what are you seeing? I know it must be very early in Harare. What are you seeing and what are you hearing?
I was talking to colleagues almost 3-4 hours ago. We could hear some explosions, but we don't know where that was coming from. Colleagues who live near some of the military barracks, as well as the state broadcaster, were saying that there was a lot of movement of military personnel taking over the state broadcaster. Late afternoon, there was also a movement. An unprecedented movement of heavy military vehicles into the Harare city center. So essentially, there was, I think, contained anxiety within the general public on the presence of the military, and it was clear that something was there.
We are very glad to have you on Daybreak Africa. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
That was political analyst Rashid Mukundu speaking with us from Harare. Today's Wednesday, November 15th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Barty in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 minutes past the hour. Human rights activists in Uganda are calling on Ugandan officials to arrest Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir, who is in Uganda for a three-day official visit. Activists want Ugandan officials to have Bashir arrested and turn him over to the International Criminal Court to face trial. President Bashir was indicted in 2009 on 5 counts of crimes against humanity and 2 counts of war crimes for events in Western Darfur. He was also charged with genocide during the Darfur conflict. Mugumi Davis Rakarinch reports from Kampala.
Mohamed Ndifuna, executive director of the Human Rights Network, read a statement on behalf of dozens of human rights groups in Uganda.
As a state party to the Rome Statute, Uganda has an unequivocal obligation to cooperate with the ICC in relation to the enforcement of warrants of arrest issued against Omar al-Bashir.
Sarah Chika, who works for the International Center for Transitional Justice, agrees that Uganda must arrest Bashir because of its legal obligations to the ICC. She says Ugandan officials should not spare Mr. Bashir because of either politics or economic interests.
We are not appealing to the president's benevolent nature. We are a country governed by the rule of law. Our statements, our position is grounded in the law. It's grounded in the Rome Statute. It's grounded in the International Criminal Court Act. And importantly, it is grounded in the Constitution, which recognizes the enforcement of international treaties that Uganda is a party to. So we are not begging Mr. Museveni to fulfill his obligations. We are asking the government of Uganda to fulfill its obligations under the law.
This is not Mr. Bashir's first visit to Uganda since being indicted by the ICC. He traveled to Uganda in May to attend President Museveni's inauguration. This week's visit is aimed at improving bilateral relations between the two countries, which were seen as foes during the 1990s and early 2000s when both presidents accused each other of supporting rebels fighting in each other's countries. Ndifuna says it is wrong for Kampala to host a person who is an ICC fugitive.
It's like having a neighbor who rapes your daughter, but is the neighbor that you sell your products to, or your produce for that matter, to. And you have to weigh whether you are going to take action against the neighbor, and the possibility of your own starvation may be glaring in the face.
Chika warns Uganda could face sanctions by the UN if it fails to arrest Bashir this time.
We ask the government to maintain a consistent approach that stands with the rights of victims, the victims in Darfur who have waited for years for justice. And it can do that by arresting and surrendering President Omar Bashir to the ICC to face trial.
Uganda government spokesman Ofwono Pondo says his country cannot arrest a sitting head of state. And he says Uganda believes President Bashir is instrumental in bringing stability in the region. President Bashir has visited several other African nations since facing ICC indictment on war crimes, including Chad, South Africa, and South Sudan. Both Chad and South Africa are signatories to the ICC. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
The coalition of 14 opposition political parties in Togo have called new protests for the next 3 days, beginning tomorrow, Thursday, through Saturday, to drive home their demands, which include a return to the country's 1992 constitution and the resignation of President Faure Gnassingbé, who has been in power since 2005. Farida Bemba Namburema is a human rights activist and director of the Togolese Civil League. She spoke to Ricky Stryak about the current situation in her country. Our home country.
This week, we are going to have more people in the protest and more cities involving. At this time, I don't want to say that it's the opposition protesting because this is no longer just a protest of the opposition, but it has become a popular movement. We are expecting this week's protest to be the biggest so far.
And what are people protesting?
Right now, people just want the resignation of Faure Gnassingbé. Faure must go has become the slogan of the protest. Originally, people were asking for the reinstatement of the 1992 constitution, which encompasses term limits, because that constitution was altered by Faure Gnassingbé's father, Eyadema Gnassingbé, who is late now, to remove term limits from the constitution in order to pave way for his lifetime rule and to also allow his son to take over. But following the inability of the people to obtain political change and the fact that the same family has been in power for over 50 years, people just got fed up. They got fed up not only of the long tenure of the same family, but also of the constant human rights abuses as well as the deprivation of civil liberties. And it is almost impossible having a government change as long as the same people are going to be running elections and will be controlling all the institutions of the country. But following massive repression of those protests, people just say, you know what, if we cannot get this term limit, then we just want you to go.
And there has been talk of alleged human rights abuses, especially in the north near the Ghanaian border, where hundreds of people have come into Ghana from Togo saying their rights have been abused. What are the human rights violations that you have heard of are taking place, and where are they taking place?
There have been a lot of repression, especially in northern Togo. One of the reasons why these repressions occur is because we don't have a lot of media coverage in the north. And then for a long time, the government has always pretended or presented the north as being their stronghold. So they wanted to kill any movement in the north in order to keep maintaining that myth of them being supported by northerners. Unfortunately, it didn't work this time. So they sent militaries to brutalize people. In the case of Mango, it was the special intervention force called Red Beret who were sent to Mango to repress the populations, and so many people got killed as a result, and hundreds fled the community. In Sokode and Bafilo, on the eastern north side of the country, it was the same thing. They sent not only Red Beret, but also a special intervention force unit that has been creating terror, instigating terror in the whole community. People have run to bushes and have been sleeping in bushes. In the bush, the whole community is under siege.
That was Farida Bemba Namburema, director of the Togolese Civil League. She said she was speaking to Ricky Stryak from an undisclosed location in West Africa due to security concerns. It appears human trafficking is on the rise in Burundi. Burundian police stopped at least 14 women last week who they say were being trafficked to Asian countries. Moses Javier Rimana reports from Bujumbura.
As poverty rate was recorded at 70% by the World Bank, Burundians are desperate to make a living as they end up being trafficked to Asian countries. I met one of the victims and didn't prefer to reveal her name. She says that she was locked in a house for 4 days without eating, only drinking. She says that she went to make a living because it was to do a housework like cooking, making house and washing clothes. She says that she was mistreated to an extent that she even wanted to commit suicide. Many like her are scammed and think they will earn a better living, but sometimes end up even losing their lives. I met Timothy Nyonguru, whose wife was among 14 women temporarily arrested last week while being trafficked to Oman. He said that the wife left him with a one-year-old child.
My case was very, very heartbreaking. Definitely, she informed me that she left, but also she told me that she cannot be back in the house due to the crisis and due to the poverty that affected our household.
Prim Barubukeye, the chairman of an organization that fights against human trafficking in Burundi, say that more than 2,500 Burundians were trafficked last year. He says that now there are women who are abandoning their families and marriages being taken by the human traffickers. Burundi government says that it's trying to put an end to the practice in the country. Pierre Nkurikiye is the Burundi police spokesman.
Last year, more than 11 companies involved in human trafficking have been destroyed by Burundi National Police. More than 20 traffickers have been arrested. Hundreds of women have been saved from the hands of traffickers.
This month, already 17 women were stopped and arrested by the Burundi police while being trafficked to Oman. This year alone, at least 356 young girls, women and children have fallen victims in the human trafficking in Burundi. Moses Xavier Imana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
A new report puts Ugandan state security agencies at the top of human rights violators, including harassment of human rights defenders. But police spokesperson Asan Kasinge denies the government agencies harass human rights defenders. Mugume Davis Rakarinch reports from Kampala.
The findings, which were released last week on Friday, were done by human rights NGO Legal Aid Providers Network. Lead researcher Jared Sushabe says the findings found out that the police lead those involved in violations of people's rights.
We found that there are extensive threats against human rights defenders working in corporate accountability sector, including arrests, intimidations, and non-respect of their rights, evictions of communities without compensation, as well as failure to get remedies when they go to courts of law and other tribunals.
According to the World Internal Security and Police Index, an international watchdog, which measures the ability of the police and other security providers to address internal security issues across the globe, it faults Uganda police as one of the worst performing in the world. According to the report, Botswana has the best police in Africa and stands at 47th position, and is followed by Rwanda, which is ranked at 50th globally. Uganda is ranked 124th, Kenya and DR Congo are 125th and 126th respectively, while the Nigerian police stands on the last position at 127. Tushabe, who is also a lecturer at Makerere University, says the poor and less educated are the most victims.
The issue is they are not respecting all the laws, especially for poor communities, for those who don't have a lot of power, especially in rural areas.
Makerere University human rights professor Nicholas Opio says he was not surprised with the findings.
If you look at the reports of the Uganda Human Rights Commission over the last 10 years, the police and the army have topped the list of human rights violators. In specific reference to human rights defenders, the status of respect for their rights is directly linked to the political situation in this country, because human rights defenders push back against powerful people, push back against the state, and an unpopular state or government responds by being aggressive, by being high-handed in the way they deal with human rights defenders.
Police spokesperson Asani Kasinje denies the police violates the rights of others. Kasinje says it is the constitutional mandate of the police to defend human rights of citizens and to protect their properties. He says actually the police works hand in hand with human rights bodies to help safeguard human rights. Kasinje admits there are some cases where security organs have literally taken laws into their hands, but says those police officers have been charged.
We have the professional standards unit in the police. We have courts of law. We have our own courts in the police where we charge officers for various professional and disciplinary misconduct.
Tshabe recommends those aggrieved seek justice either locally or in regional or international courts of law. For VOA News, I am Gume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. At least three explosions, as well as heavy gunfire, were heard in the Zimbabwe capital Harare early Wednesday, according to local witnesses. Witnesses also said military vehicles and soldiers were on the streets early Wednesday, hours after soldiers took over Zimbabwe's state broadcaster, the ZBC. Local residents said instead of the usual 11 p.m. newscast, music videos were played instead. And that is it for this Wednesday, November 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Dave Magnus, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a very good Wednesday.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information. Looking for something? Headline news, interviews, analysis? We've got it all on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.